Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is where the conversation begins.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning. It is here. Census Day. Yes, I know some of you will be thinking, oh, really? We're all across this. You've read things, you've researched things, maybe you've already done it and you're feeling smug. But for the rest of us, if you are not and you are thinking, ah, I've got homework to do tonight, well, we are here for you. Tell us your questions. Demographer Liz Allen is here to take your last-minute questions. Anything you want or need to know about the census. I am continuing to revel in this little moment that we have every 5 years about this part of being a snapshot of history. Maybe you're not as excited about it and you are being dragged into it. You want to know a bit more. Well, Liz Allen is here to take your questions and also she's got a particular, very personal connection to the census that I didn't know about before very recently, and you'll want to hear about this. And it really does go to show the many levels of importance of the census as well. So stick around for that conversation and do please give us a call to ask Liz your questions. Also today, where does this take you back to? You know it, you know it. And of course, so many of us do. Paul Simon's landmark album, Graceland, is turning 40. Can you believe it? What did it mean to you? If you are Gen X or a boomer, I think personally, this is the album that joins Gen X and boomers. It's the one thing we can agree on. You'll remember it was everywhere. And it is one of my favourite albums of all time. I had it on permanent rotation. It ramped up my musical knowledge by several rungs, introduced me to artists I never had heard of before. What did it mean for you? For me, it was the lyrics that have made it live on. Dare I say it's written by someone a bit jaded, middle-aged. I think I've grown into this album. Tell me what it means to you. We're going to be talking about the album. Remember the conversations, the controversies around it. We will talk about that. But tell me what your go-to track is on Graceland. Do you still listen to it? I'd love to hear from you. Tell me, do you think it was Paul Simon's greatest work? Controversial? Let me know. So we are talking census and we are talking Graceland, but also coming up next, if childhood cancer has touched your life or life of your loved ones, you'll want to listen to this. My next guests will be telling their stories of the ongoing cost of childhood cancers long after treatment ends and what can be done.
This is the Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
Samantha Leffler had a one-year-old daughter, Florence, diagnosed with cancer. And she is living through not just that experience, but then the ongoing financial costs. Samantha is joining me now, and also on the line with her is Monique Keary, who is the CEO of Redkite, which is a charity that's supporting such families as Samantha's. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Mary. Thank you.
Samantha, if I can go to you first and ask about your story. As I said, your daughter Florence was diagnosed with a Wilms tumour and you were pregnant with your second child. Tell us about that time for you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, look, it totally blindsided us. Cancer had never even been something that had come close in close proximity with our family. So we were really just in over our heads. We had no idea what was going to happen, what treatment looked like, the financial impacts it would have on our family, the disruption. And then as well as that, bringing a newborn child into our lives, you know, we never kind of imagined expanding our family also meant doing that with a child with cancer.
Mm. And so that path led you to chemo and surgery and so forth. I must ask, yeah. How is Florence at the moment?
Florence is doing really well. She finished her treatment about a year and a half ago, and all of her scans have been really great. So she's doing really well.
That's so good to hear.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But she had to do some chemo. She had an operation to remove the cancer as well as her kidney. And then she then went on to kind of go on and do 8 to 10 months more chemo treatment. So it was quite a long journey overall. And so the first kind of 6 months of our son's life was, his sister battling cancer.
Mm. You're listening to Samantha Leffler, who has the experience of childhood cancer in her family, and we're talking about the ongoing costs, even post-treatment. Let me know if that's part of your story as well. So, Samantha, obviously, just even hearing what you're talking about points to the emotional labour that you had there and the impact. Tell us about the financial impact as well on your family.
Yeah, see, it came at a really kind of tricky time for us. So I had just been made redundant like a month before our daughter was diagnosed, and I was relying on doing freelance work. And once she was diagnosed, I had to just kind of, I dropped all my clients because I wanted to focus on her. And as well as that, my husband, he took time off work, and you know, because cancer isn't just, you know, a short-lived experience, it's quite a long journey. He exhausted all of his leave, and he ended up having to take leave without pay. So a way for us to kind of navigate that with our mortgage is we had to enter into hardship with our lender and pause our mortgage repayments for a few months. And then once we commenced payments, we went on to reduced payments. So basically what that meant is after going through all of that, we had about a $40,000 arrears on our mortgage.
And what's the impact of that for you?
Well, so like I said, we're about a year and a half out of treatment, and we've only just feel like we're back on our feet. And that's because we were able to leave our previous lender and refinance to reduce our mortgage repayments. So because we were entered into hardship and had that arrears agreement with our lender, we were kind of locked into them and didn't really have much wiggle room to reduce our finances. So it was definitely tough. There was a couple of moments there where I wasn't sure we could stay in our house. Definitely seemed there were times that we had to sell. Like that might have been our only option. But thankfully, we kind of managed to work through all of that, and we were able to keep our house. And now we're in a position where we've reduced our mortgage repayments and whatnot. But in saying that, we still had a $40,000 arrears that got popped onto our loan. Yeah. So that's, you know, an amount that we're going to continue paying off.
Still negotiating all of that. Let me join in, let me bring in Monique Keary, who is CEO of Red Kite, the charity who is helping Australian families in this way. Monique, how typical is Samantha's story?
I have to say, Mary, listening to Samantha's story makes me feel so sad because I know that this is a common story with the families we support. The fact that childhood cancer can push families into financial crisis at the very moment they need stability, compassion and practical support. So it's common. And the research that we did backs that up.
Tell us about the research. You've found some pretty discouraging figures out there about how out-of-pocket families with childhood impacted by childhood cancers are getting.
We knew that the financial hardship was challenging and significant, but the survey results really are shining a light on something that's much bigger and where action's needed. So it's actually the most comprehensive national evidence of the scale, duration and human impact of the financial burdens of childhood cancer. And we have some quite significant data around the out-of-pocket expenses experienced by families, which people don't think about. They think everything's covered in a country like Australia. It's not. But also to what Samantha's talking about, the greatest cost possibly being the loss of income and earning capacity for these families.
Mm. What does Red Kite believe should be done? What are the bigger structural answers here?
Well, financial support needs to be recognised as an essential part of childhood cancer care, just like cancer treatment and psychosocial support. And what families need as part of that is timely and fit for purpose income support, and also better navigation and access to government assistance, which families in the survey said were challenging, to say the least. Also, they need stronger employment protections. Samantha talked about not being able to work in that freelance capacity, but families have shared their experiences of being made redundant while their child's been going through treatment, losing their contract, being told that they have chosen their child over their career. So some employment protections and some education of the workforce is also needed to help these families.
Mm. Samantha, what do you believe would have been the best support for you going through this?
I guess maybe a little bit more support from my husband's employer. They kind of, after he exhausted his leave, they didn't really offer any other kind of support for us, which definitely set us back and led us down the route of having to go and enter into hardship with our lender. But I guess in saying that, also our lender, maybe a little bit more compassion from them, and yeah, more options that we could have entered into to not put ourselves in as much debt. Yeah, I guess just knowing what was available to us.
Mm. What are your plans, Samantha, from here?
Well, like I said, I feel like we're kind of in a position now where we feel a lot better and more comfortable with our finances. You know, we try and stay positive. We can't change what's happened. We just have to move forward. So, just have to keep on keeping on.
Samantha, thank you so much for telling your story. Best of luck to Florence and your son and your partner as well. And Monique, thank you so much for telling us about Red Kite's research as well.
Thanks so much, Mary.
Thank you.
That's Samantha Leffler, who is mum of two and graphic designer and has had that experience. Monique Keary is from Red Kite. Keep with your stories coming. Someone is saying maybe there should be child trauma insurance. Maybe you've been through that. I'd like to hear from you on the Conversation Hour. Also on this Conversation Hour, a little bit later, we will be talking about one of the most iconic albums of all time. Do you recognise it? Coming up, we will be talking about Graceland, the album. But next, they're already coming in, your calls and texts about the census. But Liz Allen is a demographer and knows all about this. This is a particularly great time, not just as a demographer, but in her life as well. Censuses are personal for her, and you'll want to hear why. Liz Allen, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, and happy Census Day to you.
Happy Census Day to you too. I was confessing, I love it. It makes me feel like a part of history, so that's fantastic.
Yes.
We've already got so many calls and texts coming through, 1300 222 774, for people who might just have been caught short and they haven't done it yet, or they've got last-minute questions. But really quickly, Liz, it is personal for you. You weren't counted in the 1996 census at all. Tell us why.
I was homeless as a 16-year-old, and the enumeration strategy at the time to capture homelessness didn't include me, so I wasn't enumerated. You know, homelessness has a way of rendering individuals really invisible. And, you know, I've made my life's work to ensure that no matter who you are, no matter your circumstances, no matter where you live, you deserve to be counted.
I love this. It's the real human meaning behind your work. Liz, were you aware at the time that you weren't counted in the census?
I was aware that it was happening at the time, and I had no place.
Mm.
So,
how did that make you feel as a 16-year-old?
There are layers and layers of shame that comes with not having things, not having the basics, that feeling of scarcity adversely impacts your brain and people, and you on a biological level, you know, it gets under your skin. And so I think it's, you know, you feel like you've been left behind, like you've been forgotten and the world doesn't need you. You know, I've been lucky, opportunities have presented themselves to me by way of education. But if I didn't have those educators that said, hey, you know what, you should do something, I don't know where I'd be.
Yeah. You've just heard how important it is to fill out your census, Liz's own story. Joyce in North Melbourne, you have a question?
Yes. I'm very keen on the census. I rushed right in to do it online.
Mm.
And I'm probably the only person in Australia who could not work out the passwords and so on business.
Okay. So you tried to get online and you can't figure out the password. I must admit, I can't help Joyce because I haven't tried it online yet. I was waiting for tonight. Liz, can you give Joyce any... Oh, sorry, Joyce, what did you have to say? What was your question?
Yeah, I got online fine.
Yeah.
And I was sent a piece of paper that said the name... it gave me a census number.
Mm-hmm.
And a temporary password.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the word temporary was in there, but...
It didn't work?
Yeah, when it wanted you to put in a new password.
Right, okay. I think that might be pretty simple, but I ask Liz to say whether it's simple. Hi, Liz, what do you think of Joyce's problem?
Yeah, Joyce, that must be incredibly frustrating. So what I recommend, if you're struggling to access and navigate that system, there are people to call and ABS folks are on the standby on the hotline to answer questions and so on. So I would recommend that you go straight to the source here. And contact the good folks at the ABS. Their contact number, there are a few numbers for different matters. You can contact them online. If you would prefer to do it in the hard copy on paper, you can also ask the ABS to send out a hard copy as well.
I hope that helps, Joyce. Yeah, always good to go to the source. Fiona in the CBD, you have a question?
Yeah, I asked for a paper form to be sent to me and it hasn't arrived yet, but I'm wondering when's the deadline for the paper form to be submitted to you, because I'm scared of people turning up at the door knocking and saying we need to come in, we're from, you know, the government, because there's scammers going around. We've been warned, there's warnings going on that people will illegitimately do that. And they're actually thieves, you know.
Right. So you want the paper copy. Liz, what can Fiona do?
Yeah, Fiona, I'm not from the ABS, but what I do know about this situation is that if someone does come, and this applies to all, if someone does come to your home and says they're from the ABS, you have every right to request, if not demand, them to provide proof, and they will have an ID that will identify them as an ABS person, and they're likely wearing ABS insignia and all sorts of other census type things. So, and it's okay to say, look, I want to check. In terms of that question about concern about when to send back the form, look, you can't complete the hard copy until you get it. Once you get it, fill it out in accordance with where you were and who was in the home with you on the night of the 11th of August tonight. And then you can send it in via reply page. Generally, there isn't pressure put on folks about where your form is and so on. So long as you, once you get the form, you do it as soon as you can.
Fiona, good luck with that. Someone on text saying, look, I had trouble with the password too, Mary. It's not easy. Yes, it wasn't an easy fix, and I'll learn that potentially when I go on as well. John, you're in the Yarra Valley and you haven't got housing at the moment. Is that right?
That's correct. I was in a team.
John, have we still got you? You're homeless at the moment. Is that right?
Hello?
Yes, hello. I think I just you just dropped out, John. What's your situation? What would you like to know about the census? Is it hard to sort of get your head around when you're homeless?
Well, I don't have the census. I don't have access to it.
Right.
I'm technologically challenged and I don't know where to go. I'm in rural Yarra Valley.
Right, okay. John, hold on the line. Liz, what would you have to say to John?
Hey, John, please persevere, mate. It's super important. You can be counted, and I ask that. I know it's, you know, you've got a lot of stressful things happening right now, given, you know, living in a tent and so on. But if you can, contact the ABS or ask a mate to, maybe even go to a local library or somewhere similar to ask for assistance there. And ask and request the best way to go about it. There are places where hard copies are being provided at what are known as census hubs. They're being stood up in the interim where you can actually speak to someone and even have assistance and instructions face-to-face on how to go about responding. I do understand you've got a lot going on, but I do hope that you are reflected in the data, because your data is vitally important. The information of your circumstances are vital to the way that we can help support folks.
Do you think you'll be able to do it, John?
It's
important. We want to count you.
There is a council office at our local library, so.
So you're making way there?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. John, good luck with that, and thank you. And, yeah, I join with Liz, and I'm sure a lot of people saying, yeah, absolutely, please be counted. We all do need that. That's for our services and maybe just to be counted. Sharon, you were a collector for the census, and I believe you wanted to say something.
Yeah.
Right, okay. We had that earlier query about people coming to the door. What are your observations about that?
I just wanted to make absolutely clear and to help your very nice guest that you and actually I've got a question for her, which is, surely the census collectors now still have to wear the actual official high-vis or whatever it is that I had. I can't remember right now. And also that bag. We had a badge. We had very clear identification. Just want to clarify that with your guest.
Mm, Liz?
Yeah, definitely. So, and all census officers will have on them ID. So they're easily spotted. And if you are unsure, you can ask. You can ask to see the person's ABS census collector identification, because they will be carrying it with them if they are a legitimate census officer.
We've got so many calls still on text as well, which I'll hope to get to. But Mike in Glen Iris, you have a comment?
Yeah, hi Mary and Liz. I've just done the census and it was very easy and took half an hour. But the letter that came out is in a really small font. There's acres of white space and it's a narrow, skinny font, which makes it hard to read for perhaps older people or people like me who've got a visual impairment. And it just makes it just that little bit harder to get in and do it. I don't, like, with so much white space there on the page, it could have been designed a little bit better.
What do you think, Liz? Mm. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I haven't received a hard copy. I opted to go by way of the MyGov login, and so I've not been privy to all the hard copy stuff.
But I agree. Anything that can make the census materials stand out and accessible is a must. And so, look, that's important feedback. ABS, if you're listening, can you please make the font more accessible? Because I agree. It would make it accessible and easier to navigate if there was something that stood out. So yes, that is definitely something that an improvement that can be done. This is the first time the ABS has opted for this kind of digital first process in such a scale. Yep. And so, and that's to cut down on materials for environmental purposes and so on. And many of us, 85% of us, it's expected, will be online doing it. But yep, we need to get all of those materials right. And if you've got the time and the patience, I encourage you to contact the ABS and let them know.
We've got another comment on text saying neighbourhood houses. I think that was for John, if you can't find someone to help as well. Tony in Echuca, what's been your experience with the census so far?
Well, I've got the form first up, and then I applied by phone on the 3rd of the 8th to send me a paper copy. And they said, yep, we'll do that. And I haven't arrived. It hasn't arrived as yet. My mate had his the very next day, so I just wonder what's going on.
Yeah. What is going on, Liz?
Yeah.
You're not responsible, but we'll ask.
Yeah. It could be a number of things. So I know where I live, I don't get post every day. It could be a situation like that. It's a pity that that has happened. Most folks I speak to have received it very promptly, but that's not to downplay a situation. So again, you could make contact with the ABS and talk it through, or if there is a place where you can go and pick up a hard copy, if you have capacity to do that, you can also speak to the ABS about that as well.
Do you think you'll be able to do that, Tony?
Yeah, there'll be no problem. I'll just wait for it, and if it turns up, it turns up.
If it turns up, it turns up. I think that's a good attitude. 1300 222 774, if you've got any last-minute questions about the census. This on text, Liz. My friend lives alone and is overseas on holiday. Does someone have to log in and register that she is overseas?
Great question. No. The individual, the friend, won't be counted in the census information because they were not in Australia at the time. That said, information from the passenger card as they were travelling in and out of the country will then be used to pop the person back in by way of bums on seats into the population numbers. So don't fear, they won't be missed. One thing that the friend can do, and it's best that the friend does it, is there is an opportunity on the ABS website to let the ABS know that a particular dwelling will be vacant on the night, so that they know not to keep calling.
Yep. Liz Allen is demographer and has a professional and personal connection, as it were, to the census, and it is census night tonight. Liz, there are a few different issues that have come up. I can see reflected on text. One that's been a bit befuddling to me is that there have been reports that when it comes to ancestry, there is no box left, or there is no box supplied for China. It was reported that the ABS wanted to allow people to answer a question about which, potentially by saying which particular territory of China they were in. But other reporting says, look, it will go back and be counted as Chinese no matter what you put. Can you clear that up for me?
Yeah, look, I can't speak to the data processing that will be undertaken by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. But I can speak about the standard classifications that underpin the particular question of ancestry. And there is a specific classification that can be found online. There's a neat little ABC online article that can help you navigate to all this information. Mm. But basically, the standard classification does not have, say, for example, Hong Kong as a separate and unique ancestry. And so the ABS has been reported as saying that if someone were to say that they have a Hong Kong ancestry, then the data would all be categorised from there up to China. Look, I'm of the opinion that as long as you're not vandalising the census, i.e. you're not including incorrect, deliberately false information or drawing inappropriate pictures or swearing at the folks at the ABS.
Don't give them ideas, Liz.
Oh, look, the things that I've seen on Facebook, I tell you what, if you're posting that stuff, your name's right next to it. Don't be doing that.
Wait a minute, it's all supposed to be private, isn't it, Liz?
Well, if you're on Facebook and you're encouraging others to do wrong, the information is there.
I waylaid you. So unless you're doing that, what you're saying is that you can kind of put whatever you want, I guess, for your ancestry. It is sensitive, obviously, for many different places in the world, not least potentially Hong Kong. It is when, as a demographer then, when the ABS gets this data and then processes it. So there's the first thing, it's getting the data and then processing it. Is it possible for future demographers then to go back to the raw data and process it in a different way?
It depends what the ABS decides to do with each individual kind of, you know, if they decide to go, there are X number of people citing Hong Kong, right? So because we can't go through as researchers or even interested public and look at individual data, we just cannot do that. Mm. So instead it would be aggregated. But the question is whether or not that unique identity of a Hong Kong person can be adequately reflected. The trouble is that the ancestry question on its own is insufficient to give us a complete picture. That's why we've relied historically on things like language and religion and country of birth as ways to get a more fulsome understanding of ethnicity. Currently, we don't ask about ethnicity, and I'm hopeful that with time and with more mature conversations had in Australia about our diversity, we will get to a bigger picture where we can have questions asked and answered appropriately on who we are and what does it mean to be Australian.
Camille, you've got a question as well about the census?
Oh, no question, Mary. I'm 83, nearly 84, and I found it a breeze. Yes, there was a temporary...
That's great to hear.
Good morning, by the way, to you and your guests.
Good morning.
A breeze. I just thought, well, here's another challenge. And I'm not madly tech-savvy. I use it all the time, but, you know, not right up there. So I thought, okay, give it a whirl, and didn't have a problem.
That's really great to hear.
Excellent.
So
there you go. That's some
so
hope.
I might encourage other oldies to have a go.
Other oldies. You don't sound like that, Camille. You sound there. Yeah, you're killing it. Gary in Blackburn, what did you want to say?
Oh, I was just asking about the entry of personal details. In a world of cyber attacks and privacy breaches, I don't recall, because it's 5 years apart, I don't recall, like it's hard to recall whether we entered this information in the past. It's a bit like voting supposed to be anonymous as such.
Yeah.
You know, you still cast your vote. So I don't understand why you need to give your name if you're still casting other information in the census.
Gary, classic question. Liz, what is the answer to that? I can understand, Gary, being confused and also a little suspicious these days. Go on, Liz.
Yeah, and we need to be suspicious generally. And so I think it's having a healthy level of scepticism and suspicion is a good thing. I can tell you that names and addresses and date of birth have been collected in censuses for as long as I can remember. So what happens with that information? Why is it needed? It's not stored, and our individual information is not stored alongside those details. In fact, the ABS had a great job advert for a guillotine worker, and they, when they received the hard copies, their job was to separate that information from the maiden form, and so it's not stored. So it can go input into the system, it can be read into the system and stored. And if we're doing it online, it's a process of what's known as data being stored functionally separate. So in other words, that once the information goes into the system, that identifying information becomes separated from our responses. So anonymity is assured, and more importantly, it is guaranteed by law. So the system of the census falls under two important acts. That is the Privacy Act and the Census and Statistics Act. And there has never been a data breach impacting the census to date. And there's a long history of census taking in Australia.
Yeah, there is. Never has a guillotine worker, not since the revolution, have they been so important. Liz, just really quickly, how are you doing census tonight? Is it an occasion for you?
It is definitely an occasion, and my poor husband is very upset to learn that I'm hosting a census night with a bunch of students on campus. And the first thing he said to me is, he said, "Well, what about us?" And I said, "Well, you'll have to occupy yourself for an hour until I get there. I tell you what, there better be census pie."
Census pie? What's in census pie?
Well, it's got to be some kind of berry-related pie shape.
Oh, nice. There you go. That's a demographer joke. Demographer baking joke. What better way to end this on? Liz Allen, thank you for being so generous with your time, and happy Census
Day. Thank you
so
much. Happy Census Day to you.
Liz Allen, demographer, and thank you to everyone who has called in and texted in with questions. Look, you still have some time, and there are many, many different ways to do it. You have hope. You heard Camille. It's breeze. It's a breeze. I hope it is for me as well. You are listening to The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Coming up next, you're going to be talking about, well, I'm being very selfish here. It's one of my top albums, and it has been an iconic and landmark album for generations now, I'm going to say, at least for Gen X and boomers as well. Graceland, I'm talking about, by Paul Simon. Was it his best work? I'm going out there. What do you remember about Graceland? Where does it bring it back to? It is 40 years old. That's coming up next.
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
Be my bodyguard. I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al.
You can call me Al, just one of the many hits. I listened again to it last night, and boy, does that album hold up. Sisonke Mumsingham, I beg your pardon, Mumsingham, is the author and presenter of Boycott, and has looked at this, studied it, looked at everything from its worth in music, the cultural controversies around it, the benefits, disputed for South African musicians as well. And also, I believe, likes the album as well. Sisonke, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi there. It's great to hear that in the background.
Yeah, it is. Just first off, let's have a baseline here. Sisonke, do you like the album?
Of course. I love the album. Absolutely. It's iconic. I'm a Gen Xer. So Gen X?
Gen X?
Yes, born in the 70s, yes. So it very much was a part of the soundtrack of my growing up, and I am a South African, so it meant a lot to me.
Mm. When I first heard it, Sisonke, I came a very low musical base. It hasn't really risen that much, I must admit, as well. It It, of course, it was a huge education in terms of artists that I wouldn't have heard before. And it was also buoyed, though. The reason why it was so importantly infectious, I guess, is it carried the celebration. Can we talk about that for a moment? The thing that, that Paul Simon channeled that really made it live in terms of music?
Yeah, look, for me, the reason why I love Graceland is, of course, because Paul Simon is an incredible songwriter. You know, when Graceland came out, he had been in a bit in the doldrums in terms of his musical career. And this really revived it. Yeah, it really did. And of course, there was some controversy about how the album got recorded. It was done in, you know, in the late 1980s when South Africa was still very much under a cultural boycott, which was backed by the United Nations. And so you weren't really, as an artist, allowed to travel to South Africa to record with musicians, and certainly weren't allowed to perform, you know, in venues, because it was a segregated country and the world had decided that apartheid, you know, was a terrible thing. So he breached the boycott in order to go into South Africa in order to record with these musicians. So it was controversial on that regard. But of course, the music that came out of it was remarkable. And as you say, infectious, but also part of a very long history and tradition of choral music in South Africa called isiXhlatamiya, which is a, you know, a beautiful choral music.
Yeah. And in terms of looking back at that controversy, so many things that were done 40 years ago do not hold up in terms of the processes behind them, the attitude behind them, the lack of appreciation of cultural appropriation. Paul Simon always was conscious of that. Looking back in your mind, Sasonke, does it hold up the way he went about it?
Yeah, I think if you look at the long arc of history, there were a couple of things that Paul Simon did that were clearly in violation of the cultural boycott, but that actually, you know, ultimately weren't that big of a deal. So the big controversy at the time was that there was this place called Sun City. It was a casino and resort, and it was set up by the apartheid government so that international musicians could play at it and pretend that they weren't breaching the boycott. So it was in a sort of, it's a long and complicated story, but essentially Sun City was the focus of a lot of the cultural boycotts. And the reason the boycotts were there were because the country was segregated. And if you were going to play as a performer, for example, from Australia, you would be performing in front of a white-only audience in a country that repressed Black people. Mm. What Paul Simon did was he didn't go there to perform. He snuck into the country. He was well aware of the boycott. And he essentially recorded in a studio with these Black musicians whose music hadn't been heard much outside the country. So he didn't get a fee for, you know, performing in some big venue. He didn't endorse apartheid by appearing in public. He kind of snuck in, worked collaboratively with these musicians, paid them well, gave them songwriting credit. So did all the things that you're supposed to do ethically, and then kind of snuck out again. People were mad at him at the time. I think it holds up. I think the way that he did it is, I think reasonable people can disagree about it. But ultimately, I think it does hold up. And the outcome, of course, was this remarkable album that exposed the world to this, you know, amazing music from my country.
Absolutely. It did open so many eyes, including mine. Sasonke Simang is with you talking about Graceland, the iconic album. Lee and Glenn Iris, I'm not speaking well at all today, Lee. Tell me your memories of it or your stories around it.
Good morning. Well, I was very fortunate to go to the concert in Melbourne.
Oh, a concert
fabulous.
From the album, after the album.
The Graceland's album, Paul Simon, Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, Hugh Mazzucato, Miriam Makeba, it goes on.
And, wow.
We went to an after party at the, what was then the Hilton Hotel. And I had the, we're hanging out there. I was in my early 20s and I'm sitting there and the gentleman says to me, actually I went to the bar to get a drink. And this man says, have you met Albert? Albert Mazzabuco. And I said, no,
wow.
Hi. And the person that introduced me to Albert was Hugh Mazzucato, the famous trumpet player.
Lee, and mic drops.
And I have remained friends with Ladysmith. I remember going up in the elevator with Miriam McKeever and Paul Simon. And I remain friends with Albert Nasibuko. His favourite song on the album was You Can Call Me Al, which he just played when I got in the
fantastic.
Car. Remained friends with Ladies Black Mambazo for 40 years. Bless him. Albert just passed away very recently.
Yeah.
And they came back to Australia many times. They were my Zulu brothers.
Your Zulu brothers.
I've been to South Africa a few times.
And so, Lee, did Graceland...
I never got to Ladysmith.
Oh. So really, that just gave you friendships as well as a whole new world?
I ended up being an anti-apartheid activist in my university days. But then, when they were gone, in the absence... Albert had said to me, Lee, look to your own backyard when we're not here.
Yeah, Lee, thank you. Wow, talk about impact of an album. That is amazing. Susie, I mean, from Maribyrnong, you went to a concert as well.
I think the exact same one, but mine wasn't as glamorous as that. But it was, and we're talking late 80s, I'm sure. I can't remember. And yeah. I've been to many, many concerts since, but that sticks in my head. And the drummer and the backing vocalist, it was just sensational.
Yeah.
And it's one of my fondest memories of concerts.
Oh, that's great. Do you still listen to it, Susie?
Pardon?
Do you still listen to it?
I will now. I've forgotten really, but it certainly stands the test of time, doesn't it?
It really does. Sasanke, I wish I were at these concerts. I'm getting a bit jealous now. I was a bit too young.
Yeah, me too. I was also a bit too young, but yeah.
Oh, that's what I'll tell people anyway. Louisa in Ormond, you have been to a concert as well. Jealous again?
Where was that? It was in Harare, Zimbabwe, not long after Zimbabwe became independent. And what happened was Paul Simon charged a very low fee, something like 10 Zimbabwean dollars, so that as many people that could would attend. But also, I understood at the time that the reason he was having that concert at Rufaro Stadium in Harare was because it became multicultural. So a lot of South Africans, especially white, I would say mixed, but it allowed white South Africans as well to come to Zimbabwe and enjoy that concert. And it was an amazing, amazing day.
Yeah.
And if I may just say, Sisonkwe, as a South African, Zimbabwean, Australian, I just want to say I'm very proud of you. I see you now and again, and I'm very pleased and very proud of you.
Oh, thank you very much.
As a mum generation.
Oh, how lovely, Louisa. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Sonko. Really, these calls are just underlining, you know, the personal and political ramifications, the waves that it caused across the world. I'll just finish off with David in Queenscliff. You went to a concert as well. Was that not Harare, potentially? Melbourne?
No, exactly. It was a little less glamorous, but no doubt that and Bob Marley and the Wailers were two standout. And Bathika Kamalo on bass and the backing singers and so on were unbelievable. The whole colour and movement was fantastic, and yeah, just brought Africa into Australia.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. Sasanke, thank you so much for joining us today. Just as a final question, do you think we'll ever have an album like that? And in a good sense, we don't need an album like that to open up our eyes to different artists, or are these collaborations, and I'm going to use that word deliberately, are these collaborations just still necessary?
Absolutely. I think it's what this album does is it reminds us of the power of music to speak in a language of our hearts, you know, that it doesn't matter where you're from. If you bring your culture and your music to one another with openness and humanity, that speaks across generations. And it's the most wonderful gift that we can give one another.
Thank you, Sasanke, for being with us today and talking about the great album.
Thank you.
Sasonke Nsingham. Her brilliant ABC podcast series is called Boycott, The Fight to End Apartheid. And also that touches on Graceland as well. And she's an author of two books, as we have heard as well from Louisa there, and a fine expat from South Africa as well, talking about one of my best favourite albums of all time. And I believe, Bridget, we have your favourite song from this album.
I'm a massive Paul Simon fan. Yep. In fact, I cried when he and Art Garfunkel broke up. That was the most beautiful duo of all time.
Now, I say this album marks the highlight for Paul Simon, including Simon and Garfunkel.
I disagree.
His best work.
I disagree.
Okay, well, let's carry this fight over into the afternoon.
But I do, I do love Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes from that album, but...
People say you're crazy, Bridget.
Great song. However, it is
no... introduced a young girl to metaphor.
It's no Bridge Over Troubled Waters, is all I'm going to say to you. So I will argue this till we are forever.
No, we're going to have to fight about this between 12 and 12.30 today.
Now, Mary, census, everyone's probably sick of talking about it, but what we're going to talk about today is how the questions have changed over the years. They really have changed. But what I want to know is how has your life changed over the last 5 years since the last one?
Oh, good question.
I mean, I've got a new job, which is probably the biggest change in my life. I think that's sort of interesting. You know, 5 years ago we sat down and did this thing. 5 years down the track, you might have had a baby. You might be a grandparent. Who knows? We'd like to know.
In some ways, 5 years can be like 5 months,
yes,
or 5,000
years. That's yes. Exactly right. Also today, embracing baldness. We are going to embrace baldness. There's a lot of people out there who are saying baldness is the new way, and instead of all the stuff that can come with it, like loss of identity, it's a tough thing for people to go through. We want to embrace it and hear your baldness, your hair loss stories.
Yeah. Proud and out
bald.
There.
And bold. And bold.
Bold and bold.
Bold and bold.
The bold and
that's
the beautiful.
That's what we're calling it.
That's
oh,
what it
that's
is.
Good.
There you go.
Oh, I'm going to go and write that down.
That sounds fantastic. That is Bridget Duclos on Afternoons. Thank you so much for being with me on the Conversation Hour today. Shelley in Gippsland just says, look, Graceland, it's just great feel-good or sad music. She also says she had to go and get it because someone had taken it and given it away. She missed it too much. Anthony says that introduced him to the African sound, the music that's full of colour, and the song that stays is Diamonds. Songwriting at its best. I wish for you an afternoon filled with Paul Simon's Graceland. And also do write to me if you have any ideas about what we should be talking about on the Conversation Hour. Conversation Hour at abc.net.au. Talk to you again tomorrow.